Welcome back to episode number 261 of the Dust Safety Science Podcast. This is the podcast for building a global community around process safety, industries handling combustible dust. I'm your show host, Dr. Chris Cloney. In today's episode, we have on the podcast Diane Cave, Eastern Lead from Element 6 Solutions, based out of Halifax, Nova Scotia, but works throughout Canada and the United States. Diane, welcome back to the Dust Safety Science Podcast.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be here. It's been a while, but you know, always good to come back.
It has been, which is kind of strange because we talk a lot. In today's episode, we're talking about the top five mistakes identified during external audits and review of dust hazard analysis reports. Give some context on why it's been a while. The last time we had you on the podcast was episode 18, which is ridiculous, on top five mistakes companies make in their dust collection system design. But we've had you in the Dust Safety Academy at least twice per year since then, and probably more per year. I think we've done six presentations inside Dust Safety Academy with you, which is why it feels like we've heard and learned from you a ton. And then when I look back at my notes on the podcast, like, oh, we haven't had Diane on the podcast to get out to the audience here. So Diane has spent the last 20 plus years working with dust collection systems, covering all aspects from existing systems, retrofits, new system design, installations, hood ducting design, and more. Has done a whack on dust hazard analysis, on explosion protection systems, fire explosion prevention systems as well. And I would say in terms of dust hazard analysis completed in Canada, one of the individuals that's done, it's got to be the most or right up there, you know, top couple of people that's doing it, as many DHAs as possible in Canada. Ton of experience in this area. And I want to say one, thank you for coming on today. I'm excited for the interview.
Oh, thanks so much, Chris. I do a lot of DHAs. Do you think I'm in the top five?
I would have to guess yes in Canada. And certainly in the last couple, like the most per year. I don't know how many you do a year, if you want to share that number, but it's got to be an absurd amount.
I don't know what we did last year. I know in the month of December, we put like eight of them out the door because it was ridiculous.
So in this episode, we're going to talk about external audits of dust hazard analysis. And so you might ask the question, why is this a topic? And this is actually a presentation that we got Diane to give last week at the 2024 Global Dust Safety Conference, which was an online three-day event running the end of February. I don't remember the exact dates now. Last week, end of February 2024. And the kind of concept there was a bunch of fundamental presentations released before the conference covering what is a dust hazard analysis, combustible dust testing, explosion protection fundamentals, and other kind of core concepts. Then to kick off the conference, we want to cover some different topics like, okay, when you look at dust hazard analysis reports, what are some of the mistakes that companies do in there? When we do training, what kind of questions come up? And there's a couple topics around that. Diane did this presentation on top five mistakes identified during external audits and review of dust hazard analysis reports, because I know this is an area that she's done quite a bit of work in, which is where this kind of topic came up. And we wanted to get her back on the podcast to cover it as well. We're going to cover why a company might bring someone in to audit an existing DHA or risk assessment. What does this review process look like? We're going to cover the five key themes that Diane's pulled out from doing these type of reviews. And then also any questions that companies should be asking their DHA provider before starting to work with them. So Diane, I guess when a company brings you in or anybody in to audit or review an existing DHA risk assessment, this might be the first time like somebody's listening to this podcast has even heard of that. Why would they, like, what are some reasons that they might bring somebody in to do a third party or another review of a DHA or a risk assessment?
There's a couple of reasons, I guess you'd say. So one is sometimes the report doesn't have any sort of risk assessment in it, and it'll give like a deficiency list or whatnot, but it doesn't give them any ideas to where they should start or what's really, really bad. And if the folks at the facility don't have a good understanding of combustible dust, they might not know that, you know, I'll go back to like the presentation where it's like changing out your broom type for static sparks is how that compares to having a dust collector inside without explosion protection. Like if they don't have an understanding of hazards and combustible dust, they won't know which one is more detrimental and where you should spend your focus and time and money and energy to start. So that's one of the reasons. Another reason is the reports are sometimes so convoluted and hard to follow or like excessively technical that they don't necessarily understand what the report is telling them. So they need kind of almost like a translator, if you will, somebody that can go through it all and be like, okay, this is what you need to do in order to you know, make take it from that technical language into, you know, normal speak, if you will. And sometimes, yeah. And then the other reasons are like, they're just really poorly written and they just need help, like figuring out and figuring where they should go is kind of, I guess, the another reason.
Yeah. And I'll kind of put a summary of some things that we've seen. So you covered two big ones. They get a DHA done and they don't understand it. Like, not due to their own fault. Whoever wrote the DHA didn't write it either simple enough or it's too complex, or, but they can't get what they need out of the report. Either like the content, they don't understand what hazards were identified and that side of things, or it doesn't have an implementation plan. Okay, it has 5,000 hazards. What do we do first? Those are two kind of families of reasons why you might bring somebody in to review and audit a DHA. There's also insurance and AHJ might require a third-party audit of some of this documentation, depending on what part of the, what region you're working in. Training is a big one. If you're training up a new person to be able to do this, then having somebody else review their reports is a really good process to put in place for that. There's sometimes a DHA provider, if it's a really low cost DHA provider, will hopefully say what's out of scope and then bring somebody else in to review those things that were out of scope. For example, if they've only reviewed the dust collection system and the host keeping program, but they haven't assessed any hazards on exposure protection or fire prevention or any management systems, that should really, and a different topic that I've talked about before, probably be included in things that were not covered in the DHA, and then you might bring somebody in to complete that has the experience to do those areas. I think you actually have some thoughts on that, so we may cover that as well. There's some different ways where you might bring somebody in to actually review a DHA report for you. Did I miss anything there? Anything else that came up in your mind that, you know, you've been called in for to review these type of reports?
I don't think so. I think you kind of covered it all, at least from my experience. I'm sure that there's some other outlying things out there. Sometimes like insurers or a third party or like external to the facility will just have a request, especially if the DHA has been done internally. So you have company X and they have the skill set to do it internally, or they think they have the skill set to do it internally. So they do it internally, but then a third party, whether it's an insurer or whatnot, will come in and then be like, well, no, we want it reviewed by somebody outside. That's another, yep. That's happened a couple of times too.
And I guess, again, with the, you know, number of DHAs you've done, is this, you know, have you reviewed and audited just one report, or is this something that's kind of common that you get pretty frequent requests on for doing these type of reviews? And audit might be a strong word. I'm not sure if that's what we should call this process, but at least reviewing other reports and doing this third party review process.
So let me think about this. So we probably review half a dozen a year over the last 4 or 5 years is probably kind of the average of what we would see. And sometimes it's as simple as, hey, we've been told in our DHA report that we need to fix problem X, right? We need to put in a new dust collection system, or we need to put in exposure protection. We don't know how to do it. So can you review the DHA and then see, you know, if that's what we should be doing next, or can you help us, you know? So it's that basic sometimes is what the review is, or sometimes it's to the point where it's like, this is Greek and I don't understand, like, yep, help us. And then you're almost, so the first example, you're kind of going through and being like, yeah, okay, so you need the dust collection, you know, this would be a good starting point. It makes sense. Da, da, da. Whereas the second example, it is exactly like you said, it's almost like you're auditing an audit or reviewing the audit. And it's a lot more extensive.
So what's that process look like? It sounds like you've done, I don't know, maybe a couple dozen of these. What's a typical sort of review look like? And there is not a, I'll put this out there, there's not an FPA standard on the review process for dust hazard analysis. Even NFPA 652 and what's in a DHA is, we'll say, strongly debated between, you know, what's in scope and what's out of scope. So there certainly isn't a process for reviewing a DHA. But when you go through, there's some kind of common things that you look at. And what does the process kind of look like in terms of, do you go on site and do you look at stuff? And the reason why I'm saying this, I'm trying to get the context and background for folks. The real goal here is to say, what are the mistakes, challenges that are commonly found? And I have the list because you presented this last week and they're really useful. But I want to give people some scoping things around this on, okay, well, you know, how does this information get compiled in the first place? So yeah, what's the review process look like when you've run through it before?
So it kind of depends. So if we're looking at it as a report written in highly technical terms, let's say, then it's basically reviewing that report and going through and line iteming, you know, going through that report and being like, okay, so this is what they've recommended, this is what they've said, this is a requirement, and then condensing that into a line item list that says, okay, here you go, here's from that report, this is what actually came out in your recommendations list. And then trying to decipher from the report, as from the content that's in the report and the pictures and information that's in there, and then what other information the facility can give you as to where to kind of start, you know, like, well, this looks really bad, or that doesn't look bad, or whatnot. So it's more so an in-office kind of event, because you're auditing the audit or reviewing the audit. And then if you get into ones that are really bad, so some DHA reports I've reviewed and I don't understand them, which is a little
not
scary.
A good sign.
No, we had one client that was that a bunch of facilities all through the US and Canada, and then they were very dismayed because they had all their DHAs done and nobody was implementing anything and they didn't understand why. And so they asked if I could review one of the DHA reports. And I was like, sure, yeah. So I reviewed one and my response back was like, I don't know what you need to do. Like, I don't understand this report. I don't understand the format. It's really hard to follow. It's convoluted. And it's basically just a regurgitation of codes and standards. And so in that case, I said to them that they just need to do it again. That was what we did. And it was worthwhile, money well spent for them, because it then ended up that they went from having reports that nobody could understand to then we did a report for them where they were like, oh, and now they've already started implementing like larger capital projects that were super high risk. So
yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, so there were five kind of things that you pulled out in your presentation. Do you think we'll talk through the same five things? Maybe we'll do a summary of what the five things are here, unless you're going to throw some curveballs and talk about other stuff. But if not, then I'll do the summary of the five things and then maybe we'll kind of talk through them each individually. Would that, which way makes sense to you?
Sure, that's fine with me, Chris.
Yeah, so the five that I picked up from your presentation last week were too much spiller, poor identification of hazards, poorly organized and hard to read, weak language, and I put path forward. I think that one must be like no implementation plan, but let me look at your slides.
Lack of clear recommendation and a path forward.
There you go. Lack of clear recommendations and a path forward. So those are the kind of the five things that you mentioned you've seen. Let's walk through them. So too much filler. What does this look like in your world?
So the only place where you should have a lot of filler, I think, is in PI and not in reports. And you find, so you have to, the DHA has to be done by a qualified person. And as you know, there is always the debate over what that is, right? Time and time again. And I've seen where people feel the need to put all their qualifications in the report. So there'll be like an 8 or 10 page resume in a DHA report. And I don't understand the need for it, other than the fact that you've got it, so you put it in. Like, you're just adding extra pages that nobody's going to read for no reason. So instead, you know, condense it down into a couple of paragraphs. Or people like to basically copy all of the codes and standards and put them in the report, as opposed to just, I'm not saying you shouldn't put in references to it, but you can just put in cite the section and what it is you're referencing. You don't necessarily need to copy out 13 pages or whatever from it. Or if you're talking, sometimes DHA reports will touch on hazardous area classification. And I've literally seen where every diagrammatic example has been copied out of NFPA 499, like scanned and copied and then cut and pasted in. And so in my mind, that's all just filler, because it's the person reading it really just wants to know, so do I, excuse me, do I need to do a hazardous area or electrical area classification, or don't I? Yes, I need to do one. Okay, so that's on my list of things to do. Because the DHA isn't, its objective isn't to, you know, explain it all. It just is telling you where your hazards are and what you need to do.
Yeah, it's a great point. And the way that you might think about it is, you know, percentage of standards versus percentage of that site. And if it's 80% word for word NFPA standards or hazardous area classification or diagrams that are unrelated to that site and only 20% of the site, I don't know, put the 80% in a separate document, or that's actually already in a separate document. It's in the standards. So yes, reference so that document and then expand on the 20% that's actually useful for the site. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, so like in when we write reports, so if you're talking about, you know, you need to have a clear pathway for a blast zone, something like that, then you would just say, you know, as per NFPA section, NFPA 68 section, whatever that section is. I by no means have the sections all memorized.
The clear, you know, path blast
yeah,
zone section.
Yeah, there's that. And then if the individual wants to review it, look into it further, then they have the ability to do that. They know where they have to look. You don't need to then cite that whole, you know, that whole chapter on or verse or whatever it is from the NFPA about that topic.
Yeah. What are some other ways that filler come in? I laughed while you were presenting some of this stuff. Like information being repeated over and over. So cyclone A, cyclone B through to cyclone epsilon and upsilon and using other alphabetical letters. Like, is that a challenge where it's just the same information over and over again?
Yeah. So a lot of times, especially if a facility was all constructed at the same time, right? They'll have 37 dust collectors. They're all the same vintage, all the same size. So they're going to have all the same problems. So instead of putting one through 37 all separately, put them all in there. And even if you want to put a picture of each one, that's, I think it's good to put the pictures in, and then you know exactly what you're all talk, like what it's all covering, but then just group them together as opposed to having, say there's a page for each one. So you've gone from one or 37 pages to cover all those dust collectors to like maybe one or two.
Yep.
Kind of condenses it down a bit, especially because the other thing with that too is if you do happen to have, say, dust collector seven did have some modifications to it and they decided to upgrade something and it has something different going on, and you have these like pages and pages of repetition, that one dust collector that has something different is just going to get lost in all those pages of repetition. So if you take and pull that one out, maybe do it separately or have like a special call out for whatever is changed or different, then it'll draw attention to it as opposed to it just getting lost in it.
I can picture that as a reader reading that, like, yeah, if you read one page, there's 27 dust collectors, 26 of them have the identical risk profiles and are all missing X. But one of them has a real problem. It's handling the powdered sugar or whatever. And, you know, as like, it's obvious in that case that one is something you need to pay attention to. But if it's 27 individual pages and they're all almost the same, you're never going to find the one
no,
that sticks out.
You're going to look at it and you're going to like lick your thumb and go flip, 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 flip and be like, okay, next piece of equipment, right? Like that's what's going to happen. And it'll completely get missed because it's just kind of shuffled in, because the reader will be like, oh, well, all these dust collectors are the same. And then they'll just, you know, gloss over it. The other one where filler comes into play is some people create a template, usually done in Excel, that covers everything. So it'll have dust collectors, mixers, mills, silos, bins, like every piece of equipment you could ever imagine. And then they include that whole check sheet for all pieces of equipment, as opposed to just pulling out the section that would pertain to dust collectors or mixers or silos or whatnot. And so you end up with pages and pages of nothingness that don't matter and you don't care about. And really it's just filler.
Yeah. You said it in the press, the empty tables, where you have pages with empty risk assessment tables.
Yeah.
Like you said, I think that happens when people have created macros in Excel to do this faster, to generate DHA reports faster. But then the point that you made was really, the point is we want the reader people to be able to read and understand it. So if you have these whacks of empty tables, it's just confusing and looks kind of silly, and it's not that useful for the reader.
That's ultimately the most important part of the report, is you have to make it user-friendly and you have to make it readable. Otherwise, what's the point? Right. So you hand over this massive document to somebody, and I voluntarily did it. I was asked to read through one, and it was 734 pages long. And it was a big facility, but it's not 734 pages big. And to hand that over to somebody just to see that page size is daunting. And I'm not going to want to read it and go through it. Well, I didn't want to read it and go through it. I obviously did, but the end user, because everyone was one of my points in the presentation, is people are busy. Everyone is busy, especially in facilities, right? Most facilities, people are understaffed and too much to do. So if you hand them this poorly organized, huge, massive, daunting report that has all this filler in it, and I mean, let's be honest, DHA reports are not the most exciting to read. So all you're doing is making it, creating more obstacles for that end user with that report.
Makes sense. The second item they talked through was poor identification of hazards. I guess parts of this are self-explanatory, like did not find all the hazards. That's a problem. That's the NFPA 652 4.1 section 2 is to identify and assess any fire, flash fire, explosion hazards. So if you miss some, that's not great. But I think there's some other elements to this that you talked about as well, like maybe even, you know, pointing out less ones that don't matter and ones that are less severe, missing them or being over restrictive. Just kind of talk through this point a bit. What have you seen for poor identification of hazards?
So it's kind of like the two extremes where people go around and like everything is identified, you know, like there isn't all of a sudden they're talking about an electrical panel in a liquid storage area. So it's a dust hazard analysis. So why are we even talking about liquids, right? I'm not saying that the electrical panel in that liquid storage room isn't a hazard, but it's a hazard for a different day. It's a hazard for like a different event. And so you got to make sure that you're staying within the lane, right? And then you're covering what it is. So like you said, so it's fire, flash fire, and explosion hazards dealing with dust. So we're not talking about plumbing, unless it's to do with maybe sprinklers. We're not talking about, you know, water that doesn't drain out of a floor, making it a slip hazard and stuff like that. So it's making sure that you stay within the lane for that in terms of hazards. And then also on the other side of it, where you're, depending on what, whoever has written the report, depending on what their specialty is, you'll be able to see it in how it's written in the report. So me, for instance, I'm a dust junkie, right? So the dust maven myself. And so I focus more on dust collection and dust layers and dust systems in pertaining more to explosions, because that's what I'm more familiar with. I do touch on fire and flash fire and whatnot, but it's not my forte. But some of them I've read, definitely the person that had written the report was the all up on static. And when you read through his report and his 10-page resume at the back, he was, you know, all up on static. And anything that was ever possible to deal with in terms of static electricity, he called out. And in some cases, it's not, I don't like to say it's not a hazard, because somebody always likes to argue that point, right? But it's a low level hazard, shall we say. And then that's getting identified and having all this focus put on it, this low level hazard. So in this case, it was the material had a high MIE, and they were going on and on about static electricity on synthetic brooms when it was basically a non-issue. Meanwhile, they've got dust collectors sitting inside that have explosion vents that discharge inside at operator stations, and it's not even mentioned.
Yeah, the area where they sweep.
Yeah, but meanwhile, the plant is now running around and they're changing out all their brooms. Oh my God, we're going to die because of static electricity on our brooms. Oh! And meanwhile, the explosion vent was literally pointed at the doorway of the operator booth inside.
Yeah. Well, it's easy. And so it's easy to see. I totally have seen that too. Like where the expertise of the person before they got into doing DHAs totally reflects through in the result, whether or not they're, you know, an industrial hygiene type background or an explosion protection type background or a static electricity or dust collection background. And we're not saying like, it's good to have variety as well, but you just need to kind of understand they may, I guess, so.
They may have preference.
Yeah, they may have preference. The point I want to circle to on that was what you said was like, that's from their viewpoint. If you look from the site, what do they need? They need a top-down view of all the hazards at their site, ideally ranked red, yellow, green. And if there's a dust collector inside that's venting towards a manned station that has a person, you know, probably red. So we need to make sure that gets in there and predominantly in there so that the top-level hazards get figured out from their perspective. Sorry, I cut you off. What were you gonna say?
What I was gonna add was, I think that it's good to have, like you stated, with people having different perspectives. And I think when somebody is choosing someone as their auditor an external auditor to do a DHA, that is something that should be taken into consideration. So if you're a facility that has a really low MIE, where static electricity is a very important thing, then it would be wise to have somebody who is well-versed in the ways of static and is going to focus on that. Or if you have a lot of gas liquid mixing stuff, and then having somebody that, not gas liquid, sorry, powder liquid mixing.
Powder liquid, yeah.
Yeah, then it makes sense to have somebody that has experience in that and the hazards in that, right? Or if you're dealing with a large instance of where you're going to have flash fires or dust explosions or whatnot. So it makes sense to have these people with different backgrounds looking at it from different perspectives. And then they'll have a better idea, like you said, of what the facility needs based on their hazards.
Yeah, some experience alignment there. If you have a site that you're expecting to have routine fires, flash fires, and explosions, you put the protection methods in place, but you may want to have somebody that's got very good fire response, like as a firefighting background, that can interface between you and the fire department for the three times they're going to get called out that year, to have a plan in place. And there's all sorts of levels of experience that can be put in there, and you just kind of want to match that experience. We're going to talk at the end what questions here people ask to uncover some of these things and maybe do a bit of a group brainstorm on it. But that's definitely one. What expertise is needed, and do the broaders have expertise in that area? We talked about poor organization, hard to read a bit already. Anything that we missed in there that you think, be useful for folks that you've seen in DHA reports? I mean, they're all been pretty easy to read, right?
The one thing I like, and I think makes it easy, is pictures. So
yeah, why not, right?
The old saying, a picture is worth a thousand words. And I like to put pictures in my reports, and I like to put pictures in the report where I'm talking about it, not buried in the back of an appendices. So you've got to search back and forth and back and forth through the report. So if you're talking about, the dust layer of whatever, then put that picture there, caption it underneath, and then it's right there so that when you're reading the text, you can refer directly to it. And it also helps with the identification of equipment. So you try really hard when you're doing a DHA to make sure that you call everything by its right name. But sometimes a piece of equipment, I was at a facility this past fall, and they literally had three names for every piece of equipment. So I was like, okay, so what's its common name? what do you want me to call it? So by putting the pictures in, then even if somebody doesn't call it by its quote unquote common name, they'll still know what it is you're talking about by looking at the picture. And it's just more clarification, makes it easier. So then they can look at it and be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's, mixer XYZ. And then they can read about it.
Yep. 100% makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure you come across some fun names for a piece of equipment over the years.
I always say that I want to go to a facility where they've like named, you look at their dust collectors and they're like, oh, this is Harry, Curly, and Moe. And I think that'd be fun. But I don't know. The best one I've come across was I did one facility where they had a chocolate and iced tea dust collector. And I thought that was pretty fun.
Nice.
It's about the funnest I've had.
Awesome. Okay. Let's talk about language. So you made some really good points in your presentation on language. What comes out of this area?
This is my big pet peeve. The example that I gave when I did the presentation was when I was a kid. It had nothing to do with dust explosions or DHAs or anything at all. And so when I was a kid, I have an older brother. And so we'd be old enough to like do work around the house, but not old enough to have jobs. And so this would be in the summer. And he'd be like, if you're looking for something to do, cut the grass. And he'd come home. And of course we weren't looking for something to do. We always found something better to do, and the grass wouldn't be cut. And then he'd be mad and be like, why isn't the grass cut? Well, we weren't looking for something to do. So then dad changed his language to be like, cut the grass. And then the grass would get cut, right? So it's the same thing with the reports. So if you say something like, you might consider taking a raincoat with you. You look outside and you're like, the sky is clear. I've considered it. I will not take my raincoat and go on. So you might consider putting explosion vents in. So what does that say to you, Chris?
Well, I've considered it.
Yeah.
I've decided the bolted over ones are fine though.
Exactly. So they've considered it, and they've considered that it's too much money and we'll move on. So if something is required, then say, you need to do this. Use like firm language to direct people as to what they have to do. And there are things that come up in in the reports that are recommendations or good ideas or industry standards. So stated as that, you know, it is recommended, or this is why it would be good to do this, or whatnot. And but use the firm language, like don't make it so weak and limp that it just doesn't really mean anything. So again, back to the point where we have dust collectors pointing explosion vents into operator booths, the wording in that report was exactly that. It should be considered that explosion vents should be like, and if you don't tell people exactly what it is, then what they need to do, then they don't necessarily know, because as we've already pointed out, not everyone is an expert in this field. And so if you're at a facility that makes widgets, then they're the experts at making widgets. They're not the expert at blast zones or explosion protection or whatnot. That's why they've brought in this extra person. So to do that audit. So tell them what they need to do. Yes, no, like required, recommended.
Yep. Yeah. And we're identifying and assessing any fire, flash, fire explosion hazard. We're not generating a list of suggestions to improve their fire protection program. Or something like that, right? It's not just a list of things. If there is things that are required, and I mean, and if you read through that pay standard, you'll see like there are shalls, and most are shalls. Sometimes there's shoulds, and those shoulds use softer language. But the shalls, like you said, it's probably good to use strong language, not weak language, to get the points across. And it's probably really helpful for the site, say the health and safety person, whoever's actioning that report, to get buy-in from their team to move forward. If it says you need to put venting on that dust collector, or it could rupture, and when an explosion happens, it, I don't know if you could say it will rupture, but you know, it could rupture, and since it's inside, that will be a problem. Like, so yeah, if you use stronger language, it's probably going to help your company, the individual, push that up the chain to get the work done at the end of the day. They can't walk away, like you said, oh well, this guy looks blue, I've considered the raincoat, let's just leave this one at home today.
Yeah, it's not going to rain, you know, never. You can even separate it into requirements, like, which we'll get into, I guess, is the last point, clear path forward. You can even separate it into requirements and then recommendations. So then they know that it's like everything on the requirement list is something that they have to do.
Yeah. Well, let's cycle into that, because I think we call it lacking clear recommendations and a path forward. I mean, that's another key thing that comes up if you go for a really low price provider, is that they may provide some assessments. As an owner and operator, your requirements are the following. You must, and this is just NFPA 652, so you shall, we'll say, determine the combustibility, explosion hazards of your material, identify and assess any fire, flash, fire, explosion hazards, manage any fire, flash, fire, explosion hazards, communicate those hazards to personnel in accordance with the section. So those are all your responsibilities. The DHA provider, and this is a really interesting space, which is probably a podcast episode, but a lot of folks may call only that second bullet point, identify and assess any fire, flash, fire, explosion hazards, a DHA. That would be totally correct as I read the standard. If you squint and read it another way, you might suggest that the managing and the implementation plan is also required in a DHA. It just depends on how you flow through the document itself. At the end of the day, that is the requirement of the owner and operator. If that implementation plan is not included in the dust hazard analysis outright, then it's still your requirement to get it done. So then you need to bring, that's why you end up bringing somebody else to do the implementation plan. So that's some context and background. What are some things you've seen in terms of lacking clear recommendations and a path forward for folks? What kind of carnage does this cause after a DHA might be completed that they can't recover from?
Sometimes there isn't like a defined list. It'll just list like it'll be like NFPA 69 section 1234 is not met. And then you're like, oh, and then it is just like,
how do we meet that?
Yeah. And you're like, what the heck is that? I don't even know what that is. Like, and then it's a responsibility of the end user of the report to then like look it all up and figure out what it is. So they're telling you what the problem, quote unquote problem is, but it's not a very, you know, easy, direct method of doing it. And if
you're telling you what you're missing, not what you need to actually do.
What you actually need to
fix
do.
It.
Yeah, as opposed to just having a list. I'm a big fan of years, I don't know, like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I just literally started at the end of the report being like, the list of recommendation requirements is as follows, and then just like list them literally just list them out. And people say that that is the most helpful thing because then they know exactly what it is that they have to do. So you could not read the whole rest of the report, read that, and then read the appendices with the risk ranking, and then you're set and you know exactly what you need to do and where to start. But you also find the big one is where they just list the code that isn't compliant, or they'll list some, they'll have like the recommendations as in like this needs to be done, but then no ranking of any sort in order to assist the facility in knowing where the largest hazard is based on your assessment.
Yeah, and with your work, do you typically, like, once you write the report and have the invitation list, is that like the end of the interaction, or it's like don't email me again, or is there a possible, you know, a term of, I don't know, extension where they can interact with you and ask questions? Like, what does that typically look like, and maybe what are the different kind of flavors you might see in industry of that?
So anyone that has ever worked with me knows where I'm always like, if you have any questions, give me a call. Because even if I don't do work with people, I'm like, if you have a question, give me a call. Because I'm of the mindset, you'll greatly appreciate this, Chris, that I would rather help people do something right than to have them do something wrong and hurt someone.
Yep.
And I would rather give up my usually 5 or 10 minutes of assistance to help them than to have something go grossly wrong. And it's amazing how many people don't actually take you up on that offer. I seriously think they think that I'm sitting here with one of those, like, I don't know, like a chess clock kind of thing, like clocking the minutes, and I'm going to send them a bill, where it's not the case at all. And I'll always tell people that if you want to follow up with me on the DHA, like take some time, digest it all, whatever. And then if you want to go back and go through it all or have any questions, and by all means, we can certainly do that. Because I think as much time, you spend a lot of time with, I do anyway, with the folks on site. And so I use that as a teaching event where you're teaching them and whatnot. So when they get the report, it shouldn't be shocking and they shouldn't be like, well, I don't remember this, or I don't know what this is about. And so they should have a pretty good understanding when they get that report back. But then there's always questions, or you know, hey, how do you think we should approach this? Like there's a lot of stuff that's red on here, this list, like which one should we do first and whatnot. Which was that was how we did the one of the presentations for the academy we did on how to start after a DHA. And that was with them, they were had a lot of deficiencies at the facility. And with them, I said, "That's you should pick something easy, because this is kind of your, you know, first event at combustible dust. So don't pick something that's like, oh, this is a tough one. Pick something on your really bad list that's going to be easy, going to be an easy fix, and have big impact for everyone, so that people don't get like dismayed before you even start."
Yep. Makes a lot of sense to me. And a lot of really good points there. I think this has been an interesting discussion around, I would say, an uncommon topic, reviewing dust as and as reports. But hopefully, and this isn't like a bash session on people's reports. If you have some of the stuff in your reports too, that's fine. But it's more, you only know what you know, right? So if you've been writing them this way, or you've been receiving them this way, and they're all constantly like that, it's good to see that someone who's taken a look at several different ones. Those are some of the key themes that aren't that useful for folks. And maybe we can work towards getting into something that's actually practically implementatable by the end user, which is their ideal goal. What are some questions that a company should be asking a consultant before they start working with them? Try to feather some of these things out from, again, there is no magic list here. What are some things that you think people should be asking?
I think one of the big ones is about the background, right? Which we've already discussed. So if you're talking to somebody who's got a background that's in dust collection, and you've got a whole lot of dust collectors, and that's where your problem is, then they're probably a good one to bring in and to help you out. The other ones are, I always say that you should ask for a sample report, even if it's not from your industry. And if they push back and they're like, no, we can't do that or whatnot, then you probably should walk away, because they're hiding something, and there's really nothing to hide in a DHA. Like, it's not as if the only proprietary information in a DHA is the information from that facility. So somebody can create you a mock generic report, so you at least get an understanding and an idea of what you would be receiving. It's obviously not going to be exactly the same. You don't want it to be, but it gives you an idea. And they should also ask for some sort of, make sure that there is a defined recommendations list, and I think some form of of ranking. So whether or not it's done with risk matrix that's supplied by the facility, or whether or not it's done like on the opinion of the person creating the DHA.
Yeah, I think I kind of broke it down to three things here. So there's experience, scope, and example. Experience includes, you know, have they worked in your industry before? Have they worked with the type of equipment that you use? And are they familiar with the sort of hazards that you might be, you know, involved in? If you know that you have a low MIE dust and you're grounding and bonding your employees in that room, or, you know, that then probably somebody with electrostatics backgrounds, it might be a good idea. Someone that's only done food and feed and has never really looked at the hazards associated with
metals.
Metal is a great example. Someone who doesn't have experience with metals or 3D printing. If you're in that industry, you probably want that experience. So industry, equipment, hazards. Example reports are a really good one. 4 or 5 years ago, people were really hesitant to give their magical reports away because they were scared all the other consultants were going to steal their special outline. But that doesn't fly anymore. Now, I'd venture to say all the companies that we work with through Dust State Professionals have on hand either redacted reports or template reports or example reports, and they will be happy to give you that example. It's no longer really acceptable to say, nope, proprietary, we don't want to put that out there. And you'll find that most of those reports if they are like that, then it's probably one of the, you know, it's 80% just NFPA standards regurgitated anyway. So yeah, example reports and then scope. Scope is really important to have a conversation with at the start. So are they going to be assessing the whole site? Are there things they're not going to look into? If they're doing 3D printing, are they not going to look into the printers? Is there going to be an implementation plan? Are you going to look at housekeeping? Are you going to look at management systems? Is there any training that's needed employees? And do they have the experience to give you some of that background and training? Are they competent enough to assess PRED on dust collection systems or on vessels? Like, you sort of want to pull out those areas and figure out what's in scope with that provider. And then what's out of scope? And the big one that we pulled out today was, yeah, some sort of implementation plan, risk ranking, list of recommendations. However it's done, I would say that's probably a non-negotiable anymore as well. Otherwise you got to hire Diane to tell you what the report, like, otherwise you need two providers. You need somebody to write the report and then somebody to interpret it for you and tell you what to do first. So I think, yeah, getting example report and getting some sort of implementation plan or recommendation list out of that report are probably non-negotiables now. The only time I've seen that not happen is if you go with like a state subsidized provider that does health and safety type assessments, and they provide some sort of assessment of your hazards for like a really low cost, like a couple thousand dollars. What typically happens there is they just come in, they look at your dust collection system, they say it's deficient, they hand you NFPA with a new cover, and they leave. And they don't look at any other hazards. They haven't looked at the scopes of your mixers or anything like that. And then it's still up to the owner and operator to figure all the rest of that stuff out. That's an extreme example where scope didn't include all the hazards, didn't include the implementation plan. And as you go up to, we'll say, the value chain, you add in more and more experienced people, then you'll get more and more of that scope covered in what you're looking for. That was kind of a lot. Anything else pop up in your mind, Diane, on questions people should be asking before we close out for today?
And even whenever you're putting out that RFP, RFQ, whatever, to have somebody do a DHA, you can outline exactly what you want. So you can ask for all these things, and then, you know, you can even tell them in the report that it's like you want, you know, firm direct language used. I mean, why not? Why not ask for exactly what you want as opposed to just putting out something that is vague? Because the more precise you are, then it makes it easier for the person writing the report.
Yeah, just like this podcast, it's been tremendously precise. We've covered one line of thinking and haven't deviated at all. No,
not at all. We're laser sharp, laser focused today, Chris. Laser focused.
No, I mean, this is tremendously valuable. It's kind of just an open discussion on this concept of looking at DHA reports, seeing what common things come through. I want to say thank you, Diane, for coming on. Like I said, I couldn't imagine it was like 5 years since we had you on the podcast last time, because we talked so much in the Dust Safety Academy as well. But I do want to say thank you for your work in there. Thank you for your work in Canada and the US on combustible dust safety. And I'm sure it will not be another 4 or 5 years before we get you on the podcast again.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always, always a pleasure to talk to you, Chris. Always.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon. So you've been listening to myself, Dr. Chris Cloney, and Diane Cave, Eastern Lead for Element 6 Solutions. We've been talking about the top 5 mistakes identified during external audits and review of dust hazard analysis reports. We talked about why a company might bring someone to review their DHA in the first place. And I think there were three kind of different areas here. There was, they don't understand what's in the report. There's a lack of an implementation plan. Okay, they understand what's in there, but they don't know what to do first. Or they've been brought in as a third party by an HJA or insurance or somebody who wants to assess that DHA and make sure that the scope covered everything, all the hazards of the site. We talked a bit about what the process looked like, some of what Diane's seen, and broke out five key areas that kind of come up time and time again. So too much spiller, poor identification of hazards, poorly organized or difficult to read, use of weak and not strong language, and lacking clear recommendations and a path forward. That's some kind of key areas. Again, this isn't like we're not bashing on individual providers or reports. There's more to give some idea of if your hazard assessment includes some of these elements, some ways to improve it. You're going to be putting these requests for quoting or requests for proposals out. Maybe some things you might consider to be thinking about or questions to ask your provider. That's kind of where we closed up today, was what are some things that you should ask about. Experience in your industry, in your hazards, in the equipment that you're using, there are key things to look at, example reports, and scope. So what's going to be assessed? What's not going to be assessed? The answer is nothing. Like, everything's in scope. Maybe dig a little deeper. Like, surely they're not doing something. I don't know. Are they going to recalculate your event calculations? Are they going to audit your paper housekeeping plan? Maybe. But if they're not, you want to kind of have the list of the things that they're not going to be doing. If the answer is, oh, they're just going to do everything, then maybe have a little bit of a skeptic eye on that. Yeah, at the end of the day, you want to know what's going to be left to the facility to figure out to address all the hazards that are on the site. So that's it for this episode. I did mention it's been several years since we had Diane on the podcast, but we've had her active quite a bit in the Dust Safety Academy. We didn't ask me anything on prevention of explosions in woodworking facilities, avoiding mistakes with dust collection systems, a couple of case studies, one overcoming Murphy's Law, dust collect. A replacement where they had to hoist the thing onto the roof and had to choose between helicopters and cranes and all sorts of fun stuff. Virtual plant walkthrough and hazard analysis, keeping the kibble clean, what to do first after DHA at a pet food company. And the most recent one, top five mistakes identified, external audits, review of incomplete dust hazard analysis reports. Those are going to be available moving forward in the Dust Safety Academy, along with the other 186, I think, and counting presentations we've had over the last 4 or 5 years on combustible dust. At the time this comes out, I'm not 100% sure if that will be an available option. But if you're interested in getting access to that material, you can shoot me an email, chris@dustsafetyscience.com. In the future, we think those will be available as well. So that should be something you can find at dustsafetyacademy.com. I want to say thank you for listening to the podcast today. I hope you have a safe, productive week ahead. Appreciate everything you're doing in industries handling combustible dust, making it safer, the work that you're doing out there every day. Keep it up.